Thank you for joining. I am Carol Isom Barnes, your host of the Career Couch with Dr. Carol and Friends, returning with part two of an incredible and topical discussion with Dr. Brian Kropp of Gartner, one of the leading research and advisory companies across the globe. Dr. Brian Kropp is the Chief of Research for the Gartner Human Resource Practice. He oversees the lines of business that support Chief Human Resources and their leadership teams. He works with a cadre of leaders to develop strategic plans that will attract, groom, and retain top talent. Dr. Kropp has authored more than 40 studies while at Gartner. He leads more than 200 strategy sessions with executive teams at Fortune 100 companies, as well as leading more than 300 executive education sessions across the globe. He is a frequent contributor to CNN, The Economist, The Financial Times, The Wall Street Journal, and other top media publications, which made him one of 2020's top 100 HR tech influencers. Last week, we discussed a host of trends related to the employee work experience versus the employee life experience. We talked about gender gaps, privacy and technology, bias towards remote workers, and compensation transparency. This week, we are picking up with Brian on the topic of privacy and performance. I hope you enjoy the discussion. Let's talk about performance from an employee perspective. Mm-hmm. I hear, as I'm sure you have, we all have, about employees feeling stressed while they're working from home. Yep. They're managing the children, they're managing the schoolwork, they're working long hours, a lot of times because of the accessibility of the technology. And I don't know if you heard this, but I saw an article yesterday with the employee from Wayfair that got fired, and he's filing age and caregiving discrimination because his wife took on an expanded job somewhere else, which required him to do more of the caregiving of the children. And he sent his boss a letter saying, "This is my situation." The boss never responded. He sent another one. They never responded. Then he got fired, I presume, for performance. With all of this going on, maybe even some extra costs for employees related to being home for food, utilities, which may be offset for the mere fact that maybe they're not traveling. So maybe all of those costs offset. But the impact to the employee mental health and its downstream effect on productivity, I guess is where I'm going, is real.
Yeah.
And you talked about mental health support being the new normal.
Can
you elaborate on this a little bit more, and where, you know, as we talked about privacy, as this mental health support comes into play from the employees, where is the line in terms of, you know, not violating the employee privacy?
Yeah. You know, I'm not familiar with the exact details of the Wayfair situation, but stories like that and themes like that are bubbling up everywhere. And one of the, you know, if we roll the clock back to, you know, April of 2020, the biggest concern that most companies had when we talked to CEOs and CFOs at that point was employee performance is just going to fall apart and the company's going to fall apart. And what we've learned is that employees are actually amazingly resilient in terms of their performance. And, you know, employees have figured out a way through to continue to perform for the most part. But that doesn't mean it hasn't been costly. Because to your point, what we see on all sorts of dimensions, mental health, the amount of sleep that you get, the number of hours worked, the feelings of loneliness and isolation, any of those metrics, they're all worse now than they were 12 months ago. There's one company that we work with, a large employer, small community. They've seen the divorce rates of their employees increase across the last 9-10 months. And part of that is just the pressure and stress of what's going on, of two people working for the same company, being on top of each other in the same house, and like all those sorts of factors. So the costs are real from that perspective. And what companies have realized during this time period is that what people can, and human beings, it's our very nature as human beings to try to figure a way through, that figuring a way through, it's a lot of long-term damage on people. And for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, it's possible, but month after month after month after month, it has really added up. And it's not in a linear way, it's in an exponential way, where it's getting more and more worth each month. And this is where companies have realized that we need to treat our employees as people. And there's a CFO that I was talking to a while ago. I really respect him, incredibly smart guy, but right out of central casting when it comes to, you know, CFO, like gruff, smart, but mean, to be fair. And I was talking to him a little bit ago, and he said this thing to me, which has stuck with me for a while, which is, I had a radical realization during this time period. I'm like, what was it? Like, what'd you learn? He's like, well, I realized all of these employees that we've got are actually human beings. And at some level, I'm like,
what did he think they were before? Numbers?
Yeah. But even if the most curmudgeon-y stereotype CFO is having that realization that they're actually people and we should treat them like people. And if we treat them like people, not workers, they're more productive. And so how do you treat someone like a person? How do you have that sense of camaraderie, that sense of relationship with people? And it is so different now than it was a couple of years ago. And we can't put that toothpaste back in the tube or, you know, whatever analogy you want to use here. It is, as once we've looked inside people's lives and understand their needs, and the reality that they're these humans that happen to work for us, these people that happen to work for us, rather than these workers that make widgets, it just changes the relationship entirely for the good on both sides. But we're seeing that shift occur.
It sounds like a lot of employers are now getting it a little bit, albeit, you know, there's a long way to go, but that social contract is changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been changing, but now it's really changing. It's really going beyond the transaction of, I come to work, you give me a paycheck, I go home, I come back tomorrow, I work, you give me a paycheck. And that contract it's slowly changing. I mean, it's been changing all along, but I think now people are starting to get that, like you said, these are real people with real lives. And if their lives are not healthy, then they're not going to be productive, and I'm not going to have a healthy organization.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a silver lining of the whole pandemic, is that some companies were starting to realize that before, but because of COVID, that's been massively accelerated. And there's a lot more companies that realize that now than would have if COVID-19 hadn't happened. And for all of the terrible things associated with the pandemic, that's actually a good thing, that this realization that, you know, more people, we should help each other. We should support each other. And when we do that, our employees are better off and we as employers are better off. And it's that putting all those pieces together is, I think, a real fundamental shift in terms of how executives are viewing the world now compared to, you know, 12 months ago.
I'm just paraphrasing, but you have quoted somewhere in your article as saying, well, something related to, we're going to shift to a hybrid workforce. And is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so given that, what do you think the impact's going to be on corporate real estate if we're forward and we're working in the hybrid model?
Yeah. You know, back in April, May timeframe, when a lot of executives started to realize that employees could be really productive working from home, you know, folks did some math. And what they found is that the average cost of real estate for employees, it varies from place to place. And so it's about 20 to 30% additional cost above and beyond someone's salary. So if someone makes, just to make the math easy, $100,000 a year, the typical company is paying about an additional $25,000 a year for rent, utilities, cleaning costs, all those sorts of things that are coffee in the office, whatever it might be. And a lot of folks said, well, gosh, we can get rid of that $25,000. And even if we give employees $5,000 to equip them at home, we're $20,000 ahead from that perspective. And they saw these huge cost savings. So the first reaction in a lot of cases was, well, let's just get rid of a lot of our corporate real estate. But what has been playing out across the last 9-10 months is there's some employees that love being remote full-time, but there's many, many more who like being remote part-time, but miss some of the things that are associated with an office. And it's not just work. which is where a lot of people go. And there's, you know, even with great technology, it's hard to collaborate virtually. It's, and we're getting better, but it's not the same. There's some things that are better done in person, for sure. But what people miss the most is the social part of it, the emotional part of it. And what I think a lot of people have underappreciated was, you know, the whole having a friend at work actually makes a difference. And knowing about the social connections and having the social relationships and feeling part of a community, which you can kind of replicate in a virtual world, but not as well. Just being honest about it, that's what people miss. And as we've been talking with companies, what they've been thinking about and getting to is that we don't need to have, you know, 8:30 to 5:30, 5 days a week where people come in and work. Instead, what we should do is get to some version of, you know, like Tuesday through Thursday from 10 until 3 is when we expect people to be there. The rest of the time, you work in the way that makes the most sense for you and where it makes the most sense for you. So when we talk about a hybrid environment, the world that we're seeing playing out is some of the people in the office some of the time and some of those people out of the office some of the time, and creating a seamless experience across all of that, which is going to put a new burden on managers, in all honesty, as they are going to have to manage a much more complex working environment than they've seen before. And not every company will go here, but we think the majority will. One, because what we found is that employees prefer that sort of hybrid environment. Two, there are some cost savings that can be achieved from a real estate perspective in that sort of approach. And you can maintain, if not improve, productivity a little bit by making that happen. So it's really winning all around. However, we're going to have to really adjust what our managers do, how they work, how they operate, and it's going to put a burden on them to make this work.
So two things that you said, and they're two totally different things. So one, it made me think about, you know, the 9-to-5 workplace. Is that going to go away?
Yeah. Being a little bit sarcastic, the only reason why we have a 9-to-5 workday is that we all worked in a factory, or when all of our equipment was in the place of work, that's what made the most sense. It was just a shift. And, you know, that shift ended up translating from physical work to knowledge work, and which never changed. Like, if we were to design it from scratch today, we would never design it that way. So much of the brain research shows now that people are only productive for a couple of hours at a time before they need a break. A lot of it shows that most people only have, you know, 20 to 30 hours of real good productivity per week. And then we just fill up the rest of the time because we're supposed to. And so you've got all that. Then you started to see where these experiments have been playing out. So Microsoft Japan did this. The state of Colorado has done this. Several other companies have various experiments on this where you just decrease the amount of time that people work to 80% of what it was before, and they haven't seen any productivity declines. If we were designed from scratch, we would not design a 9-to-5 workday. We would design it with much more flexibility around where, when, and how much people work, and we'd focus a lot more on the outputs that people are accomplishing rather than the inputs that people are putting into work.
That's interesting, because even the second part of the question that I had was related to the managers, how challenging it will be for managers to manage in this new model.
Yeah.
I've seen research in the last year or so that the role of the manager is diminishing, going away, being phased out. Any thoughts on that?
We think it's changing a lot for a variety of reasons. So one, when you look at a lot of what a manager has historically done, a lot of that's being replaced by technology. So if you think about scheduling, approving expense reports, tracking when people are checking in and checking out, sorts of things, there's technology that can do all of that for you. So at the extreme, if technology advances at the speed that we think it's going to advance and companies adopt all of it, about 60 to 70% of what a manager currently does has the potential to be automated across the next 5 or 6 years.
So then with those, the remaining 40% of those responsibilities go then to, say, the senior leader, and then that whole middle management layer just be eliminated?
Well, you certainly need fewer of them if you've got more automation that's going on. So you can stretch them across and manage more people. On the other side of it, though, what we've been talking about is this more humane relationship, is that rather than managers being people that can track people's tasks and see if they're doing their tasks correctly, the job of a manager looks a lot more like a social worker or a therapist or a coach than it ever did before, which might mean that they can't manage as many people. But what it certainly means is you need people with very different skill sets and capabilities than we had before. And as we've looked at the data, manager spans have been steadily increasing for about 15 years now. And with technology, with the shift, we think it's going to increase more, even with the additional complexity. But the complexity, the emotional support that they're going to need to provide is going to dampen it a little bit. But the other implication that this has, and this is a really big one, if there's fewer managerial jobs for me, but I still desire to get ahead, how do you create career paths for people that aren't about management? And the companies that can create interesting, compelling, rewarding career paths for people that aren't about manage other people will be advantaged in the labor market and get better talent to come and work at that organization. But we think that there's a world in the future which is fewer managers with bigger spans doing different things than they did before.
Well, that'll be the one to watch.
Yeah, it'll be super interesting to see how all this plays out.
That will be the one to watch. And I just have one more question for you, Brian, and that's really related to, you know, the vaccination. And so obviously this is a big issue and, you know, and it's going to be a big issue, you know, I believe not just in corporate America, but even as we travel domestically and internationally, you know, you predict that employers will offer the vaccine as a key differentiator to attract talent. Now, I don't know that that would necessarily lure me to a company, but can you elaborate on this? And is there data to support this?
Yeah. So a couple of interesting things for you. As we've been working with all the different companies that we work with, there's only about 6 or 7% of them that are planning on requiring proof of vaccination to return to the workplace. The vast majority of companies are saying, we're just going to encourage you to come to the work, to return to the workplace, and we're going to encourage you to take the vaccine, which then creates a work environment where we're still going to have to socially distance, still have to wear masks, do all those sorts of things in the workplace for, you know, many, many months, if not a little bit longer than that, to come. But what we also see some other companies doing is going beyond simply encouraging employees to get a vaccine and actually creating financial incentives for those employees to get a vaccine. So just within the last couple of weeks, we've seen companies like Trader Joe's, Dollar General, a variety of others that are creating financial incentives either by paying people the amount of time that it would take to go get a vaccine, paying them like 4 hours worth of salary if they do that. They're giving them additional leave to do it, so they're giving them more time to do it, and so on. And what we think is likely to happen is that the companies that are providing those sorts of financial incentives, that financial incentive by itself is probably not a lot. 4 hours of salary is 4 hours of pay, which is real money, but you know that's not life-changing wealth by any stretch. What it does show, though, is something different, which is we care so much about you as an employee, and we care so much about your health and your family's health and everyone around you being healthy. We're going to do everything we possibly can to really create the sense of health and safety and that we care about you and care for you. So the reason why we think it is going to be a differentiator of a company's ability to attract talent is the story that you can tell around it. Because it's not just a story of, hey, we gave you a vaccine, you're good now. It is a story of, we care about you. And this is a manifestation of how we care about you.
Okay.
And we're willing to pay money to make that happen. That creates a very different conversation. Because what will happen, you know, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, there's going to be all sorts of interviews between candidates and employers where that candidate says, well, how did you treat employees during this time period? And there's some companies that are going to be able to say, we focused on their safety. We gave them financial incentives to get vaccinated because we think that's really important. We want them to be safe and healthy. And you can list off this as one of several things. And there's going to be other companies that say, we just force people to come to work.
Yeah, that makes sense because I initially when I saw that, I thought that wouldn't lure me. But then you're right. When you put it together and you have a narrative that's associated with it, that I care about you, that does change things. But does any of your data show that more companies, I know you mentioned 6% are doing it about now. Does your data show that more companies are going to require that employees become vaccinated before they come back to the workplace? And what does that mean if they do?
Yeah, so that data was from December, right? Like third week of December. We're collecting more data on that right now. So stay tuned on if that number's changing. But based on the conversations that we've had, I don't think it's going to change very much, if at all. What they're really waiting for is some sort of directive from CDC, World Health Organization, whoever it might be, to say that this is what they should do. Because what those companies are really concerned about is people who choose not to get vaccinated, either because of health reasons, and that's a very real thing, for religious reasons, that's a very real thing, for personal beliefs, whatever it may be, that if you force people to do that when they don't want to, then that creates all sorts of other legal challenges that are there. Now, on the other side of it, if you have people coming back to the workplace who are not vaccinated, and then they get other people in the workplace sick, that creates a whole other set of legal challenges.
Right.
So where most companies are right now is we're still going to kick the can down the road a little bit in terms of reopening the workplace. But with vaccinations rolling out, it's gone from a theoretical thing that we'll have to figure out at some point to a much realer thing that, you know, sometime middle, end of Q2, that they're going to have to make a real decision on what do they do. And they can't just delay anymore at that point, because there'll be enough people vaccinated that you can't say there's just too many unvaccinated people. That's not even worth it. You're going to have to make the decision sometime around there.
Yeah. Well, Brian, this discussion, we could talk on and on because it just fascinates me. It's provocative. It's engaging. And I know it's going to be, you know, very interesting to see how the pandemic really shapes and changes the workplace. I really thank you for joining me on the show. I appreciate your insights and sharing your data. Is there anything else that you would like the listeners to know before we close out this episode?
Yeah, you know, two thoughts. One is the human part of human resources has never been more important. How we make our organizations more human and more humane, I think, will be the guiding principle that executives need to be thinking about going forward, is the first one. And second, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever it might be, and more than willing to continue the conversation with other folks from that perspective.
All right. Thank you so much. And you can locate Brian's article on Harvard Business Review, found at hbr.org, and it's entitled 9 Trends That Will Shape Work in 2021 and Beyond. I'm Carol Isom Barnes, and I can be reached at carol@experienceleadership.com, or you can visit my website at experienceleadership.com. Brian, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, listeners.